benefit of our visitors, I'm not the regular preacher here, but we do the best we can. The lesson today is going to be quite simple. I only have one point, so I want to start off with a sad story. It happened to me a few weeks ago. I've been taking a class for a while, and I met a friend there. See him once or twice a week, or maybe the past 6 or 8 months, and he called me up, and he said, "Hey, Alton, I bought a new canoe. Would you like to go help me break it in?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I'd love to do that." And he said, "Okay, well, Sunday morning, you know, let's go." I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't go on Sundays because I usually go to church." And he said, "Oh, well, I didn't take you for a person who went to church." And I said, "Oh, well, that's disappointing." And he said, "Oh, well, you know, I didn't mean it like that." And I said, "Well, that's kind of the whole point, is to stand out and make a difference." And after that, the conversation just kind of trailed off into something less offensive. And it really made me think about myself, made me reevaluate who I am. And I have this idea in my head of who I think I am, and then something like this happens, and it's kind of like a reality check. So, me being the person that I am, I sit there and I analyze that, and I say, "Why would he say something like that? You know, I don't go out and party. I don't drink. I don't cuss. I don't lie. You know, what happened here?" And after studying and thinking a lot about it, I decided that in life, a lot of times you're defined by the things that you do, not by what you don't. I want to say that again. In life, you're defined by what you do, not by what you don't. So if you don't hear anything else today, I want you to take that home and think, what am I doing for the Lord? I'd like to start by reading from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38. Matthew 5, verse 38. "You have heard that it was said, 'An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.' But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use and persecute you." So I think that those are some hard pills to swallow. And I want to go back and look at these verses again a little closer. And I want us to notice two things. One is the contrast of what the current thinking of the time was, and then what Jesus said. And then the second thing is, are the commands that Jesus is giving active or passive? So in verse 39 says, "But I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." So I've tried to think of maybe some a little bit more modern day applications to help us understand what Jesus is saying. So in verse 39, I think if someone's ridiculing you, maybe this verse can say, well, don't retaliate and say something negative back to me. So maybe you have the person in the office there who's always on your case, but you say, well, I'm a Christian, I'm going to be better than them, and when they say something to me, I just won't say anything back. But I think what Jesus is saying here goes further than that. And I think in that case, maybe we should try to find some good things, some good character traits of that person, and speak well of them. Verse 40. "If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also." So, does Jesus here tell us to countersue someone when they sue us? No. He's saying that if you owe someone money, you default on a loan, and you're sued to pay that back, that if you just pay back what you owe, that's justice. You're not doing anything special there. And when you represent God, you need to do something more than that and try to amend that broken relationship. Verse 41, and whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him two. We don't walk everywhere like they used to, but a lot of times here at church, we have a close family, and sometimes people need things. And I think of some people move, and they need help lifting the heavy furniture. And, you know, some people, they'll show up, and they'll help move, and that's good. But it'd really make a difference if you went out and rented a U-Haul and showed up with it. And maybe that sounds a little crazy, but I think what Jesus is telling us here is that that bit of initiative can really make a difference. Verse 42, give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Several of us know a person who, you know, maybe it's a person in your family or someone who always needs money and always asking to borrow. And Jesus says, you need to give it to him. And of course, we need to be good stewards of our money, but that doesn't mean that we can use that as an excuse to keep our money, and I put that in quotations, or resent the ones who Jesus is not blessed as much as we are. We need to be there for that person. And down to verse 44. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. I've been persecuted before. I was down by the San Marcos River handing out flyers, and I was almost done. I just had a couple more left, so I was walking back to my car. I saw an officer of the law there, and so I walked up to him and said, hey, here's a flyer. I'd love to have you come to church. And he said, hey, you can't hand those out here. So this is a free country. I can hand these out wherever. He said, well, sorry, not here. He said, what about the freedom of speech? Well, sorry, you can't do that. And, you know, like I said, I just had a couple more flyers, so I didn't press the matter. But do we think that that's the persecution that they're talking about here? That was a joke. The persecution that he's talking about here is people barging into your house and threatening you, your life, or your family's life, if you don't denounce Jesus as the Son of God. That's serious. Over in Romans, if you'll hold your place there in Matthew, in Romans chapter 12, goes a little further. Romans chapter 12, verses 17 through 21. It says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So we look at these, and some of these commands, they sound a little crazy to me. And in my line of work, I always try to think things out logically. And giving nourishment to your enemy is a little illogical to me. But of course, that's from my human perspective, and that's not a godly perspective. So let's pick back up in Matthew chapter 5 with verse 45. Matthew 5, verse 45. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so. Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. So what Jesus is saying is that this isn't the normal, typical behavior. But in verse 45, he says that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. So if we want to be children of God, these are the things that we have to do. In verse 48, you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. So if we want to be perfect, then these are the things that we have to do. And maybe you're thinking, well, Alton, these are kind of more attitudes to have. I think you're taking a real literal interpretation of these. But in verse 38, Jesus starts out with speaking of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And in the Old Testament, that was very biblical. Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 16, you see the parable of the rich young ruler, and I'd like to read that. Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 16. Now behold, one came and said to him, Good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? So he said to him, Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. He said to him, Which ones? Jesus said, You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to him, All these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack? Jesus said to him, If you want to be perfect, go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Isn't that the way we are sometimes? We say, well, Jesus, I'm comfortable with doing these things that you say. Well, I don't mind coming to service. Maybe I don't mind letting people borrow my money, but, you know, and then you could fill in the blank. Well, but this loving your enemies, that's too much to ask. I don't know if I can do that. But we really need to be willing to sell out. Jesus asks a lot, but he doesn't ask more than what he was willing to give. And Jesus is our example. We look in John chapter 13, verse 12. John chapter 13 is where Jesus is washing his apostles' feet. John chapter 13, we'll pick up in verse 12. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, Well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. So washing other people's feet isn't exactly high on my priority list, and I doubt that it's high on many of yours. But if we look in verse 17, if you look at the King James version of that verse, it says, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. So Jesus is telling us we'll be happy if we wash other people's feet. And I think that we can take even more out of this and think about what Jesus just did. He just washed Judas's feet after he gave him the morsel. And we remember who Judas was, right? So just want to make the point that Jesus isn't asking us to do anything more than what he's done first. We must be actively serving, and that's what we have to do to set us apart from the world. We have to be willing to go further. And I'd like to go back to Matthew chapter 5 again. This time, read verses 13 through 16. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see that you do not do bad works and glorify your Father in heaven. Did I read that right? No. He doesn't say that you don't do bad works. He says that they see your good works. So I want to make a differentiation between not doing bad works and doing good works. I have a silly illustration here, but I think that it'll help make the point. I have three different outcomes to the same situation. We have this is an example of a bad work, then a not bad, and then a good. So here's my example of a bad. I come home from my job, and Heather doesn't have my dinner ready, sitting on the table. And I get mad, and I start calling her bad names, and I tell her she's a bad wife. Okay, that's a bad example. Okay, not bad would be, I come home from my job, Heather doesn't have dinner ready, so I sit down, and I wait, she gives me my food, I eat, just kind of go through the motions. Not bad, not good, just kind of floating. Okay, now, an example of a good thing would be, I come home from my job, and I thank my wife for being willing to fix me dinner, and then offer to help with the dishes afterwards. Now, obviously, the last one there requires extra effort, but that's what I'm talking about, is making that extra effort, and that's what can make a difference. So, not only do we need to do good things, but I think that we can even go further than that, I'd like to make the difference also between good things toward people, specific good things, or kind of good deeds in general. So my example of that is a good deed in general would be cleaning the bathrooms here at church. That's a very good thing, and thank you for everyone who does that. But something more specific or personal can be taking a meal to someone or inviting your neighbor to come to services. Something that makes someone feel special. And I know that we're all members of the body and we all have different roles here, but I think that we can all go out and do these personal good things, and especially we're all responsible for inviting others to come to church. So let's not use the passage about praying in our closet to excuse us from being active Christians and going into the world, sowing the seed, making a difference in our jobs, and living that perfect life that Jesus wants us to. In Matthew chapter 25, it's the scene of the judgment day. Matthew chapter 25. I'd like to read verses 34 through 36. And the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. So these are all actions that require extra effort that Jesus is telling us to do. And again, saying that we can't just wander through life and hope to end up in heaven. We need to be actively serving Him. And I think that James reiterates this in James chapter 2. In James chapter 2, verse 14 through 16, James says, what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? So, obviously good intentions are not enough. We can't just warm a pew on Sundays and not be an active Christian and still be pleasing to God. We must do more. So now I want to make some application of these verses. So we've said all of this, and how can we apply that into our everyday lives? First application is you go to work, you do a good job, you don't cheat on the clock, but do you use your job as a means for reaching the lost? You probably spend more time awake at your job than you do at home. And we need to remember that God gave us that job, and God gives us our food and everything that we need, so we need to have faith in Him. And I think that teachers should be teaching the students about the Bible. And I don't mean homeschool teachers. I mean teachers that teach in the public school system. I don't know where we got the idea that our jobs are more important than reaching souls, but it wasn't from the Bible. We look in Acts chapter 5, starting in verse 40. Acts chapter 5, verse 40. And they agreed with him, and when they had called for the apostles and beaten them, they commanded them that they should not speak in the name of Jesus, and let them go. So they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. And daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. So I think that these verses can give us a perspective of what the early Christians' priorities were. I would bet that most people in the world would say that avoiding physical abuse is pretty high on their priority list, but it wasn't high on the list of the apostles. Or many people in many Christians in the first century church. And we say that we're patterning ourselves up against the first century church. Are we? The second application is that coming to church is not an example to the world of Jesus Christ. Of course, it's a good thing, but let me ask, is it more effective for your neighbor to see your car missing on Sunday mornings, or for you to take the initiative, go walk next door and invite them to services? In Hebrews chapter 10, we see that we know we're not supposed to forsake the assembly. We know that we need to attend, and we also need to be encouraging each other as well. Assembling is largely for the edification of the saints. God doesn't need our worship. We need to worship God. We cannot take the attitude that, well, the sign's out front. If they want to know the truth, they can just come in here and get it. And perhaps we don't come out and say that, but I think sometimes our actions reflect that attitude. If we just go back up a couple of verses in Acts, in Acts chapter 5, verse 27. Acts 5, 27. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? And look, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine, and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. So, I want to ask, are we filling St. Marcus with his doctrine? Sometimes I wonder if we try to be so pure and sanctified that somehow that prevents us from going out and convincing the world that Jesus is their Savior. Jesus was accused of receiving sinners and eating with them. Could you be accused of that too? Here we're expanding our building. Are we just going to sit around and wait for people to wander in? Is that how our population is going to grow? Or are we going to go out there and actually do some work in his vineyard? Jesus spent his whole life serving others, and we need to look to his example. So, to sum everything up, moral of the story is you need to be better today than you were yesterday, and you need to be doing more today than you did yesterday. Need to make improving our lives for Jesus Christ our main goal. And Jesus asks a lot from his children, but he doesn't leave us empty-handed. In Philippians 4, verse 13, says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And in Psalms 18, verse 29, says, for by you I can run upon a truth, and by my God I can leap over a wall. So we see that God is the source of our strength. So the narrow road isn't the easy one, but it's the only one that leads to everlasting life. Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14. Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14 says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. So, if there's anyone here today who needs help getting on or staying on that narrow road, if there's anything that we can do to help anyone spiritually, anything we can do to assist you, please come forward as we stand and sing for your prayer.